lot of our clinics are being closed in the inner communities. It's time to get the boots on the ground. It's time to show faith by coming into the black communities, setting up pop-up shops for vaccines.
Latino Americans are getting only 11% of vaccines, despite being 18% of the population. The failure to equally share coronavirus vaccines with all classes is expected to further exacerbate the nation's long-standing socioeconomic inequalities, which the pandemic continues to reveal. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Like millions of other young people in the EU, Charles Prevot feels he has not been given adequate support by authorities during the pandemic. In order to survive, the entrepreneur has purchased his own hot dog stand, which he operates in Brussels.
I was working on a restaurant, so I was managing a restaurant, and I lost my job, and I was like, what I can do next, what we can do, what the young people, the young men, the young ladies in this world, in this city, in this country, what they can do, because we don't have any help.
As businesses continue to fold in the EU and millions lose their jobs, people feel there is no hope. Only 6.4% of the bloc's population have received a vaccine. That's tiny compared to the UK and US. A two-day video conference involving EU leaders has just concluded. They are very concerned about COVID-19 mutations.
The B.1.1.7 is by now in all member states but one. The South African variant is in 14 member states and the Brazilian variant in 7. So there's a lot of challenge ahead of us.
Variants are allowed to flourish when people are not vaccinated. Experts say the bureaucratic structures of the EU have resulted in citizens having to wait far too long for vaccines. However, EU leaders say producers are not keeping their promises in terms of supply.
We want more predictability and transparency to ensure that pharmaceutical companies comply with their commitments.
Health officials warn mixed messages from EU leaders about the efficacy of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine are making citizens reluctant to take the jab. Two other vaccines have been approved here, but supply remains a big problem. A fourth vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is likely to be approved next month. During their summit, EU leaders talked at length about the importance of developing certificates to show people have been vaccinated in order to open up travel. Commentators are describing this as laughable, saying it is putting the cart before the horse, given the current state of play with respect to the rollout of vaccines. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Rome's Association of Palestinians called a sit-in in the vicinity of the Italian parliament to draw attention on Israel's COVID-19 vaccine program, which excludes the nearly 5 million Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip under Israeli military occupation. The rally was supported by a number of left-wing groups and unions.
The fourth Geneva Convention stipulates that Israel has a responsibility as an occupying power to ensure that medical aid reaches the occupied territories to combat the coronavirus crisis. Responsibilities also include providing vaccines in a non-discriminatory manner to Palestinians under its control.
Israel has the duty to provide COVID vaccines to Palestinians. The question is why nobody talks about it here in Italy. TVs and newspapers praise Israel's vaccination campaign, but they don't say a word about how Israel is a militarized country which is not observing its international obligations and pays each vaccine dose double the price, promising pharmaceutical companies patient data.
While Palestinians' right to health care is undermined, Tel Aviv has pledged to send thousands of spare coronavirus vaccines to foreign allies that have accepted Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem, such Czech Republic, Hungary and Honduras.
These vaccine donations are the latest example of Israel's new expression of soft power. Tel Aviv rewards or sways those that have little access to vaccines in exchange for their complicity. This confirms the absence of morals and values of Israel.
We are calling on Italy, the EU and international community to take concrete measures to force Israel to provide Palestinians with vaccines. We are not begging, we demand what is ours.
In January, the United Nations voiced its concern over Israel's refusal to vaccinate the Palestinians, but the appeal has gone unheard so far. Max Civili, Rome.
Across South Korea, vaccinations against COVID-19 began, with more than 5,000 nursing home residents and care providers scheduled to get their jabs by the end of the day.
I was thinking of the elderly patients at our nursing home who have been exhausted and sad about not being able to see their families, so I'm glad to be the first person to be vaccinated. I hope herd immunity is established so that our patients can see their families and everyone can return to daily life without masks.
President Moon Jae-in observed people getting their shots, seeking to encourage people to be vaccinated when it's their turn. South Korean officials say the country should achieve herd immunity by November of this year. Herd immunity is achieved when a high percentage of people have been immunized, preventing the spread of a contagious disease. But about half of South Koreans surveyed are hesitant to get their shots. South Korea had been successful in limiting the spread of COVID-19 during the initial outbreak a year ago, but has seen waves of the virus infect hundreds of people each day since November last year.
There are many reasons why I will get my shot right away, but I think during the last year of COVID-19, the government has done well to prevent it spreading, so I trust them in terms of the vaccine.
South Korea has received vaccines, but I'm hesitant to get it. It's because in the UK, many cases of side effects have been reported, so I'm a bit reluctant. I want to watch what happens, and I'll get it if it's okay then.
Seoul's November goal of herd immunity may also be complicated by supply chain challenges and drug-resistant variants of COVID-19, with a return to normality more likely in 2022. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The nursery home in the vicinity of Tehran, and people are waiting to receive the first dose of their COVID-19 jab. At this phase, which is the second, the elderly and those with underlying diseases and the disabled will get the vaccine. The country's health minister, Said Namaki, attended the retirement home in Kahrizak to launch the campaign. He told reporters that these people will be vaccinated free of charge.
Fortunately, today the second phase of corona vaccination began across the country. At this stage, in addition to people working at the ICUs of the hospitals and the more vulnerable ones, the elderly will get the jab. We launched a campaign here at Kahrizak Nursery Home, but as of tomorrow, at most of the nursery centers, this will continue.
Press TV asked the minister when the normal people will take the vaccine, and he answered that hopefully by September, most of the Iranians will be vaccinated.
Based on the priorities, first off the healthcare staff and then the elderly and people with specific diseases, as well as those injured during the Iran-Iraq war, will be inoculated. Afterwards, it comes to the normal people, and I think most of the target groups will get the shot by mid-September.
We also interviewed the head of Iran's welfare organization, who told us that in the first stage, some 20,000 doses will be allocated to nursery centers across the country.
Over 14,000 elderly people are receiving services at nursery homes across Iran. Out of them, over 3,000 were infected, but some 2,200 got well, 506 people are under treatment, and unfortunately, 375 ones lost their lives despite our efforts. At this center, 1,400 aged and disabled people will be vaccinated within 2 days.
The Islamic Republic kicked off the first phase of COVID-19 vaccination with administering the jab on medical staff working at some 600 hospitals across the country.
Iranian health officials say indigenously produced shots will be used in the later stages of the campaign. Over 110,000 people have been vaccinated up to now. Iran has so far logged more than 1.6 million COVID-19 cases, with over 59,800 deaths.
Iran began its COVID-19 vaccination program on February 9th. The top priority group of vaccination are doctors and nurses who are working at intensive care units of the hospitals. The next group are these elderly people and the ones with underlying diseases. Human Abedi, Chahrizak.
Venezuela's Congress, also known as the National Assembly, has requested the government of President Nicolas Maduro to expel European Union Ambassador Isabel Brillante out of the South American nation as a diplomatic action countering the recently launched sanctions from the EU against the Bolivarian Republic. The Maduro administration has denounced the European measures, describing them as illegal and harmful to the economy of Venezuela. Venezuelan officials say that the EU, along with the U.S. government, are plotting to produce a humanitarian crisis in the Latin American country in order to bring down President Nicolas Maduro. Although a UN human rights envoy recently declared foreign sanctions on Venezuela have no legal basis and must be lifted, the EU has ratified its decision. Venezuelan authorities claim they will legally confront the sanctions.
Okay, van 34 meses.
The EU, just like the US, is criminally targeting Venezuela. However, this unfair aggression will not oust Maduro.
Meanwhile, in the opposition, some say elections in Venezuela would ease the elimination of sanctions.
If free elections were held here, all foreign sanctions would blow over, but Maduro refuses to do so.
Nonetheless, socialists insist that neither the EU nor the US can judge what free elections are.
We have already had free elections guaranteed by many foreign observers, so the EU and the US are lying for political purposes.
Caracas slams the EU over violating international law with illegal sanctions. The expelling of the European ambassador is widely seen as a response to the bloc's economic policies against Venezuela. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
This is a specialized meeting on the latest studies on the coronavirus. Organized and hosted by Bakayatullah University, the event brought together epidemiologists, virologists, and other medical experts to present their team's latest findings on prevention and treatment of COVID-19.
We tried the so-called plasmapheresis in treating COVID-19 patients. What is plasmapheresis? It's a method of removing blood plasma from the body and re-injecting it into the bloodstream. We conducted this method on 28 COVID patients, and it was effective so far. We need to gather a large sample to achieve more reliable results.
We conducted a single-centered retrospective observational study of 60 laboratory-confirmed COVID patients and administered low-dose prednisolone in combination with naproxen and lopinavir. This helped reduce the length of patients' hospitalization.
Since the pandemic broke out in Iran, Bagayatullah University has dedicated its R&D centers to COVID-related projects. So far, it has launched 200 research projects that seek to find a way to tackle the pandemic. Among them is a recombinant-based COVID vaccine that is making its way to the human trial phase.
We are wrapping up the animal trial stage and will soon begin the human trials of our vaccine. Our university has become a hotspot of major projects that center on COVID-19. We were amongst the first center that proposed plasma therapy for COVID-19. We're also conducting research on stem cell therapy and other viable treatments for the novel disease.
With the Bakayatullah vaccine, Iran now possesses three viable candidates that have made their way to the human trial: COFARS, which is a recombinant vaccine, and COVIran, which works based on a weakened coronavirus. This, as Iran has already started its mass inoculation program using Russia's Sputnik V.
Bakayatullah Hospital has since day one been one of the most active places in the fight against COVID-19. Now, as many biotech firms are concentrating their efforts on prevention and vaccine development, this center has also paid attention to treatment. Researchers here say they're very close. to an effective COVID medicine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Almost 1 year after the first positive case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Afghanistan, the country has now launched its first COVID-19 vaccination campaign. Representatives of medics, Afghan armed troops and journalists are the first ones who will receive doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine donated earlier this month by India.
Today I congratulate the people of Afghanistan on the launch of the first stage of COVID-19 vaccination. This is a big opportunity for the people of Afghanistan. I request all government bodies, media, and our religious scholars to cooperate with each other to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign smoothly.
Afghanistan received 500,000 doses of AstraZeneca's vaccine from the Serum Institute of India, which is producing the vaccine for mid- and low-income countries, earlier this month. The spread of COVID-19 in Afghanistan hardly hit the Afghan society due to mismanagement and lack of medical equipment. However, officials here say the government is committed to implement COVID-19 vaccination campaign all over the country.
We don't expect any miracles. We need full collaboration of the entire society. So let's help this campaign to be implemented justly.
Taliban has announced its backing for the vaccination campaign. However, the inoculations comes amid relentless violence despite intra-Afghan talks. As official statistics estimate, up to 10 million Afghans that make nearly a third of the population might have been infected with the coronavirus. Nearly 60,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and over 2,000 deaths have been recorded so far. Afghan officials say the pandemic is still a serious problem for the country and urge health workers to vaccinate the whole nation in a fair and transparent manner. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The passage of time will never let the world forget the war crimes former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein committed against the innocent Iranian people. As part of its heinous crimes, the Iraqi dictator bombarded northwestern city of Sardash in 1978, killing 119 innocent civilians and exposing more than 8,000 to toxic gases, which maimed them forever. But Saddam was not alone in this 8-year war, and there were several countries, including Germany, France, the UK, and the US, that assisted him by arming his regime by chemical weapons. The Islamic Republic has always stressed that those complicit in Saddam's war crimes must be brought to justice. Therefore, in the presence of the country's top officials, an international conference was held in Tehran to look into the legal and international claims of the Islamic Republic in this regard.
Many countries gave Saddam intelligence, political, economic, military, and media support. All the world witnessed that these countries all stood against the great nation of Iran. But the United Nations could not play its role. The UN did not declare the Iraqi regime as the aggressor and the perpetrator of war. This is the question that the international community must ask the UN. Why the Security Council did not stop the aggressor from committing crimes against the Islamic Republic?
In the face of the chemical attacks, the international community turned down Tehran's frequent requests for deployment of experts for field investigations, something that Iran's foreign minister blasted during this event.
The Iraqi regime used chemical weapons against Iranian civilians and non-civilians, and also the Iraqi people. In 6 or 7 reports by the United Nations, it was declared that the chemical weapons were first used against military forces and then civilians. But the United Nations does not have a good record in supporting international law, and during the imposed war, it did not even use the means to make power balance.
It was also stressed at this conference that the assassination of the former Iranian IRGC Quds Force commander General Qasem Soleimani is top on the agenda to be followed up as part of this plan. Thinkers and researchers from 17 countries presented their papers on the legal aspects of the imposed war on Iran. These experts in both virtual and in-person methods elaborated on how the foreign countries helped Saddam's regime in killing civilians. Human Abedi, Tehran.
ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be looking at a question that is a point of contention amongst the Muslims. And that's this, that we know that we're of the opinion that although all of the companions of the Prophet were respected, they are to be honored, they are to be respected. Nevertheless, we're not of the opinion and of the belief that they were all absolutely just in the sense that anything that they did should not be called into question, and they never made them, and that they never sinned. It's possible for somebody to raise the following objection here and say this, that how could you say that this is so? Isn't there a hadith and a tradition from the Holy Prophet who said that my companions are like stars? Whichever one you follow, you will be led to guidance. If somebody sins, if somebody commits transgressions, could one be guided by means of following them? No, obviously one couldn't. This shows that these companions of the Prophet, they were inerrant, they never made a mistake, they never sinned. Otherwise, if they sinned and we followed them, we would not be guided, we would be misguided. And the answer to this question is that, first of all, even if we disregard the fact that the chain of narration of this tradition is incorrect and it's problematic, the tradition itself, if we examine the tradition itself, we'll see that it's impossible for a sane person to ascribe such a tradition to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Why? Because if this tradition were true, it would mean that the Prophet was would have commanded us to do something impossible. Why? We see that in certain events, certain companions of the Prophet performed contradictory and conflicting things. For example, we see that a lot of times there was a battle in which two companions were on two sides of the battle. For example, in the Battle of Siffin, on one side there was a lot of the companions of the Prophet following Imam Ali alayhi salam. On the other side, there was a set of companions following Muawiyah. Right? So, if this tradition were true, it would mean that we should follow both sides. In other words, we should be on the side of Imam Ali and his followers, and also on the side of Muawiyah and his followers. This is impossible. So, this clearly shows us that this tradition, it doesn't make sense to ascribe it to the Holy Prophet. Aside from this, we know that a lot of the great scholars of the Ahl Sunnah have also expressed and explained that this is a tradition which is fabricated, and after being fabricated, ascribed to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. For example, Abu Hayyan al-Andalusi, who was a famous Sunni scholar, he clearly says that this is a tradition which was fabricated, and it's impossible in any way to ascribe it to the Holy Prophet. In a similar manner, Al-Jahiz says something similar in one of his works. A scholar by the name of Bazzaz, he also says something similar to this. So this is something that we have to accept, that this tradition, first of all, it doesn't make any sense. It goes against what we clearly see in the lives of the companions, and a lot of the Sunni scholars say that this hadith is unacceptable. Thank you for joining us here on The Key we were examining the justice, absolute justice of the companions of the Prophet. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight. Militia groups involved in the 6th of January insurrection want to stage another attack around President Joe Biden's upcoming address to Congress, aiming to blow up the complex and kill lawmakers, the acting chief of U.S. Capitol Police has warned. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnist Ed Pilkington. The piece is titled, Militia Attack Groups Want to Blow Up Capitol During Biden's Speech, Police Chief Warns. Stay with us for more of Ed Pilkington's article. Militia groups involved in the 6th of January insurrection want to stage another attack around President Joe Biden's upcoming address to Congress, aiming to blow up the complex and kill lawmakers, the acting chief of U.S. Capitol Police has warned. In alarming testimony to the House subcommittee, Yogananda Pittman said that threats were circulating that directly targeted the president's first formal speech to a joint session of Congress. A date for the event has not yet been announced. We know that members of the militia groups that were present on 6th of January have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible, Pittman said. The police chief's warning was made in the context of trying to justify to Congress why exceptional security measures put in place in the wake of the 6th of January assault needed to remain in place until alternatives could be devised. A large area around the capital is still surrounded by a 7-foot non-scalable fence, and thousands of National Guard members continue to be deployed. Based on that information, we think that it's prudent that Capitol Police maintain its enhanced and robust security posture until we address those vulnerabilities going forward, she said. Her words are also likely to be taken seriously as a clear indication of the ongoing threat posed by the armed militia members who took part in the storming of the Capitol, in which 5 people died and almost 140 police officers were injured. Ashley Babbitt, a Trump supporter and a military veteran, was shot and killed by a Capitol police officer on Wednesday, 6th of January. Several of the most prominent armed militia and extremist groups in the United States were at the forefront of the Capitol riot. The assault followed an incendiary rally by former President Donald Trump to promote his big lie that the November election was stolen from him by Joe Biden. A number of militia members have been arrested and charged as part of the giant federal investigation into the events of 6th of January. In an indictment handed down last week against 6 alleged members of the Oath Keepers militia, the Justice Department charged that the group had planned for several months to prevent Congress from certifying the Electoral College results of the presidential election. Several members of the far-right group, the Proud Boys, have also been charged with criminal conspiracy. This week's congressional hearings are the start of what is expected to be a slew of official investigations into the drastic security failures that gave rise to the breach of the Capitol complex. In her testimony, Police Chief Pittman confirmed that some 800 rioters had entered the building and that the total number who were present amounted to as many as 10,000. Capitol Police Chief Pittman has stepped up to lead the Capitol Police Force after the chief at the time of the storming, Stephen Sund, resigned just days after the catastrophe. In his evidence to Congress earlier this week, Stephen Sund said, "These criminals came prepared for war." The FBI and other law enforcement agencies are tracking closely far-right online chatter for early warnings on any possible repeat attacks in Washington or other U.S. cities. In addition to President Biden's upcoming congressional address, law enforcement will also be on alert on days leading up to 4th of March, the date set by the extreme conspiracy theory QAnon for Donald Trump to return to Washington to start a second term as president. Followers of the crank movement have been growing increasingly agitated by the fantasy around the Donald Trump comeback on 4th of March, the date on which U.S. presidents were originally inaugurated. Meanwhile, 5 alleged members of the far-right Proud Boys group have been charged with criminal conspiracy in last month's deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol that sought to keep then-President Donald Trump in power, according to a criminal complaint unsealed on Thursday, 25th of February. Federal prosecutors on Thursday also outlined details of a suspected plot by the anti-government Oath Keepers group to stage a quick reaction force outside Washington on 6th of January, ready to fight hand-to-hand if ordered to do so by former President Donald Trump. More than 200 people have been charged with federal offenses in the bloody assault on Congress, which claimed the lives of 5 people at the Capitol and led to Donald Trump's impeachment trial on a charge of inciting insurrection. Democratic prosecutors at the impeachment trial have described how they said Trump laid the groundwork for the attack by falsely claiming he was robbed of re-election by voter fraud, then exhorting his supporters to fight like hell and to stop the steal. Two alleged members of yet another right-wing extremist militia, the Boogaloo Boys, were arrested by FBI agents in Louisville, Kentucky, on Thursday on federal charges of instigating acts of violence through social media. One of the two, John Subleski, a 32-year-old, was accused of inciting a riot in downtown Louisville, Kentucky, on 6th of January, contemporaneous with the Capitol riot, in which he and others pointed rifles at motorists and barricaded a number of roads, federal prosecutors said. The second person, Adam Turner, was accused of directing threats at police officers. The Louisville charges underscore the dimension of the right-wing extremism across the country in the aftermath of the tumultuous 2020 presidential elections. At the same time, the U.S. Justice Department is considering whether to charge members of the groups under the federal Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, known as RICO, normally used against organized crime. In the new Proud Boys complaint, prosecutors charged William Cressman, Christopher Kuhn, Luis Enrique Colon, Felicia Connold, and Corey Connold with conspiring together to block Congress from certifying President Joe Biden's election victory. It alleges that as far back as December, organizers of the Proud Boys, including its leader, Enrique Tarrio, encouraged their members to travel to Washington on Wednesday, 6th of January. Enrique Tarrio was arrested 2 days before the Capitol riots on charges of possessing two high-capacity rifle magazines and for burning a Black Lives Matter banner during a December demonstration by Trump supporters. To date, the United States has charged at least 18 people who are believed to be associated or allied with the extreme group the Proud Boys.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So today I was thinking we should discuss about how to deal with stubbornness in a child, because these kind of situations occur a lot and we tend to not know how to, you know, react when a child is very stubborn.
Yes, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In actuality, every child will have a degree of stubbornness in his nature, you know, that he wants, because he has this feeling that I am myself and I want to be independent and I want to have my way. So it starts from the age of 2 years, as small as the age of 2 years.
Wow.
So a stubborn child generally insists to get things done his way.
Mm.
Whenever he finds some resistance from others, he will have, you know, a recourse to crying and shouting. That's his way of saying that, no, I want my way to be done.
Yeah.
And the parents at this time become completely, you know, baffled.
They don't know how to react. They don't know what to do.
And they feel that the only way to make him quiet is to give him what he wants. That's a wrong way, of course. There are other ways to deal with this. So he may even, you know, hit himself on the ground and hurt himself. But we have to act like a parent who is like...
in control.
In control and the head of the, you know, like the child. Not the child taking over the parent. Parents should take over the child. And this is when such situations arise, especially when the child becomes stubborn in nature.
Yeah.
And the child will go as far as even refuse his main basic needs like food, just to get at the parent and to see how much the parent is resisting. Because parents have this soft spot that, oh my God, my child is not having food, he'll get weak, no, better get him what he wants.
Yeah.
And, you know, like try to manipulate him in whatever and try to cajole him and things like that. But that's a wrong way again. And the child will always use this method to get his way. So here, it doesn't mean that you refuse food to the child and the basic needs. You always give the child the basic needs. But if the child refuses out of stubbornness, it probably even will throw the food away or, you know, throw the crockery and become aggressive and hit the other members of the family. And if this persists, that the parent always gives in to such kind of habits, then it will persist until the youth age.
Mm.
And that's why you see some people, they can't control themselves. They have this habit of throwing things.
Yeah.
You know, they want to just, you know, blow somebody, or they can't control themselves because of the fact that they were given instead of having that control, the parent having the control over them, that how to deal with such situations until the child himself feels that he needs to give in.
Yeah, and I guess in these situations, the parent has to try and be very, you know, neutral, because when sometimes the children act so stubborn, either the parent gives in or the parents get angry, and then they get angry at the child and they say no, and, you know, there's a kind of a fight. Because the child doesn't understand why the parent is not giving in, or the child wants to, you know, get his way, and the parent feels, why isn't the child listening? So there has to be this neutral, you know, way of reacting, so that the child is, even if the child is screaming, you know, acting very normally, so that the child feels, okay, you know, I'm not going to get what I want, and there has to be this kind of controlled situation. Yeah, exactly. So we're just going to take a short break, inshallah, and we're going to continue for more on this after the break, inshallah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
So welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So yes, we've been talking about how to react with a stubborn child and how to, you know, be with them and how to tackle this problem.
One way to tackle this problem, which is very effective, is a way to train the child to come around to accept what you want instead of what they want. It's called the Socratic method.
Okay.
And this is the method that would work mostly by a kind of reasoning out, in not a rational way, but in the way that is felt tangibly for him.
Okay.
You know, like if you want something, you know, then you understand what he wants and feel excited over it. Oh, you want this, huh?
Mm.
This is very good for you, right? Uh-huh. But what if, for example, if this happens and then... what if we get into trouble because of this? What would happen then? You know, get him in a position that he first feels that you understand, and you feel so, you know, like you want to give him whatever, but understand as well, but feel bad for him as well that you can't do it for him. But first of all, you should make him feel that, yes, you are with him. You understand it. And then finally, you come around to making him reason out the way you want.
Mm.
And he will come around. Of course, it's a task that needs to be practiced a lot. And for people who want to, you know, delve more on this, they could read ahead on the way how to reason out with the child in getting what the parent wants rather than what the child wants. As far as the stubborn nature is concerned of the child. Because in many situations, you feel that you are on the spot. You're taking on the spot. So in these situations, maybe you could use things like distracting the child, making the attention of the child, you know, get wayward, focusing on something else. But this is very temporary. If you want to teach him the permanent method, for example, if a child wants to not put a raincoat on for his class, for his school. Then he says, no, I don't want to put a raincoat on. So the father says, oh, you don't want to put the raincoat on? Why? It's because it's this in color. So probably the child says, yeah, because, you know, the father knows the child, or the parent knows the child, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's too big for him, or it's too small for him, or the color is not appropriate for the child. So then you say, yes, oh, you stand out when you wear this kind of jacket. Says, yes, I stand out. Okay, what about wearing another jacket? Would you wear that? Says, yeah, maybe I would wear that. What about a pink one? What about, would you wear maybe your mother's jacket? Says, yeah, I wouldn't mind wearing my mother's jacket. So at least he would put on the jacket in the first place to be avoided of the cold, right?
Yeah.
Rather than getting sick. So you see, whatever the father or the parent wanted, the child came around to the same, you know, idea.
By making them
rather than getting his way. That no, you have to put on the jacket. If you don't put on the jacket, this will happen.
Mm.
So it will never be done with happiness.
Like, let them come to that conclusion. You don't force it into them.
Yeah, and in this way you're also training children to ask and think more.
Very true.
Yeah? In everything, to think more ahead. Philosophical mind. To have a philosophical mind is to think more, to keep them, you know, driving at keeping one thought dwelling to another thought such that they reach a conclusion by themselves rather than you placing a conclusion in front of them.
Very true. Thank you very much. We're just going to take a short break, and inshallah after the break we're going to continue this discussion. Stay tuned.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So we have been talking about how to deal with the stubbornness nature of a child and how to, you know, react and deal with this and tackle the situation. And you were talking about this Socratic method, that we have to tackle the child in a way that to make them see reason, you know. Yeah. So it's a very interesting method. And
yeah, and come round to the conclusion the way the parent wants.
Exactly.
In a happy way rather than a forceful manner. Another consideration that the mentor should take is that as far as possible, he should give freedom for action to the child. You know, a child is left to play for 7 years free to play. That means whilst playing, he should be kept free. As much as possible, he should be kept free. He shouldn't be interfered with much with their actions, not perpetually keep on telling them not to do things, you know, do it your way, or don't drop things too much. When the child tries to climb over a chair, for example, you know, don't ask him not to climb over a chair when you put the chair.
You make the situation the way you want it. Yes. Don't stop him from doing that.
Yeah. For example, if he tries to peel a fruit, don't stop him and tell him that you're peeling more skin than the fruit. You know, let him try and experience things himself. In fact, let him even take the risk sometimes and peel his fruit more. Of course, with not a very sharp knife that you should be careful of. That is one of the things that a parent has to be careful of as far as the dangers are concerned.
Exactly.
But when he peels it more, he will realize that his fruit is very small. The consequences will be borne by himself. And he took the risk of peeling. And you let him peel. So next time he'll say, you can comment that, look, your fruit has become small because you peeled a lot, right? But it's not a bad way you peeled. It was a very good thing that you did. You know, bravo, you did it in the first place. So don't interfere with their actions too much. Mm. That makes a child less stubborn. Because he'll feel that he has his freedom.
He's given that space.
And they love their freedom, especially whilst playing. But if you interfere with, you'll see that stubborn nature coming up. Yeah. And no, I want it my way. And you will see that sometimes without the permission of the parents, they're doing things that they're not even supposed to do. You know, like taking the dangerous things at home, like the knives, and climbing very high up, which they're not supposed to, or taking the very, metal tools of their parents that they're not supposed to touch.
I've heard that, like, when you stop a child a lot from doing something that is naturally, he's naturally inclined to do, for example, that you stop him from eating junk food at all, like completely, and the child is being exposed to other children who are eating it generally, so then the child sometimes goes and hidingly does it, eats it. And you don't want to make the child do things hidingly from you. You should want the child to always be open with you.
And free.
Yeah, and free
and
with
happy
you.
To do whatever he does, right?
Exactly.
So this way, he'll be forced to do that action. For example, the way you mentioned eating the junk food. So I would suggest probably be moderate with him. Allow him, you know, some kind of junk at certain times. And, you know, probably you can explain that, okay, we are eating this, but you know, our thoughts will be filled with junk. That's what it affects. The proper food gives the proper thoughts. So what would we like? Of course, we would like the proper way of thinking, right? Even a child understands this, that he wants to be clever in future. He doesn't want to be dumb or something like that.
Yeah. So or we substitute and make something else, but in a more healthier way, and you know.
There are so many ways, but of course, it shouldn't be stopped altogether, especially if they want it so badly, right? Rather than, you know, having our way, they will come around to thinking that, you know, like they would want to, you know, adopt the way of the parent, which is best suited for him, of course. So one of the reasons for stubbornness is also the excessive interference of the parents in the child's actions.
Yeah, and sometimes the parents feel that, no, it is their duty to explain them and, you know, and tell the child that, no, you don't have to do this and this is going to be the repercussion. But at that moment, the child is still young. They don't understand all of these concepts. You have to, like, deal with the child in a way that they will learn from it.
And they see it.
Exactly.
Rather than rationalizing and advising them that, you know, if this happens, this would happen and you don't want this to happen. They say until a child reaches by the age of 7, they won't learn these rational concepts. They will all learn it by, you know, seeing and feeling. They want to see the effects outside. So this is how you show them.
Yeah, very true. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. But inshallah, that we are able to continue this discussion in the next episode. Inshallah. Dear audience, thank you very much for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir and visit us at our website parstoday.com. Inshallah, until the next program, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.